1 year for our anniversary, Emily and I went to Costa Rica and stayed someplace on the Pacific coast. One night, after we'd fallen asleep, an amazing thing happened to us. Emily woke up in the middle of the night, and as she looked over towards me, she saw a silvery gray form lift up out of my body and fly out the hotel window and leave. And she thought, "Oh, my God. Here I am, stuck in Costa Rica, and we have 4 kids back home, and Steve just died." I was having what I had always called one of my flying lucid dreams, which I've had all my life. I was flying over the jungle and the edge of the ocean. Even though it was the middle of the night, I was seeing with celestial vision, so I could see the gorgeous quality of the water and the jungle, as if it was daytime, but everything had its own light from within it, as opposed to light coming from the sun. I saw the most beautiful, alive colors and light. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I was flying along in a state of complete freedom and happiness. All of a sudden, that ended, and I found myself back in the room, thinking I was just waking up from a dream. And I felt Emily looking at me. I looked over, and her eyes were like saucers. She exclaimed, "Thank God, you're back." And I said, "Back? Where have I been?" She said, "Well, you left." I said, "I've done no such thing. I've been here the whole time." And she said, "No, I saw you leave your body." And then she described to me what she had seen. That's when I realized that many of these lucid, brilliant dreams are soul travel experiences. Now, Emily normally doesn't have these metaphysical experiences. She is your quintessential Earth mother and loves every minute of it. But she actually saw my soul fly away, because I think she was in a relaxed state of mind, where her filters were down. And the filters being turned off allowed her to actually see my spirit, lift up out of the physical body and fly away. She saw me as I left to enjoy the deep, spiritual beauty of Earth. I first found divinity through the doorway of the creation that the divine being has put here. The highest expression of it, of course, is the Earth around us and the sky around us. It is very Native American. Being part Cherokee and Catawba, I have a deep love for the Earth. This has a lot to do with the work I'm doing now. My love and passion for nature and spirit is what moves me. I'm motivated by the future I see of Earth and her children. I see it and know it is possible. It has been said that the best way to love God is to love His creation. I view it this way: there's the divine, infinite mind, that's the inner being of God, of the Supreme Being. But the entire creation is equally infinite, and that's the outer robe, or raiment, of God. The creation is the outer expression of the same thing, and it's all one, perfectly one. Even as a child, when I'd look up at the stars and see the sky, I didn't see empty space. I saw joy and felt an awake presence. I felt the divine being, expressed through nature and through the creation. As a scientist, I view it that way. This view is not incompatible with the study of the biochemistry of flowers, seeing how incredibly wondrous and extraordinary it's all put together, whether it's genetics, whether it's physics, whether it's electromagnetism, whether it's quantum physics, whether it's string theory, whether it's biochemistry, molecular, anatomy, physiology, it's all an expression of an incredible conscious living being. All of this is the outer body of God, phasing, resonating, moving as matter or space or time or energy. Thus, every created thing is a doorway to the Creator. Walt Whitman certainly knew this, and Thoreau and Emerson. Nature is a great teacher. We have come out of the womb of Mother Earth, which is an outer expression of the infinite Godhead. Infinity is within us and within all things, but not divided, eternally in its perfect wholeness. Everything is within and perfectly connected to each other. It's the perfect quantum hologram. The question is there a meta theme that encapsulates all these experiences? The big theme and the transcendent theme is an ineffable oneness. Oneness. If you have the ability to experience this state of consciousness, where you transcend space and time and materialism, you can encounter someone from another culture on Earth or another person from another planet or another realm, and rather than seeing them as other, you see them as same. This is very important, because the consciousness of otherness is rooted in ignorance. Otherness is ignorance, whereas oneness is enlightenment. If you can look at all beings and see that they're awake and conscious, just as we are, you can experience your oneness with them. This is true no matter how different their intellect, body, emotional timbre, or fund of knowledge may be. All these things that we usually focus on are real, li ephemeral. If we look at the fact that they're awake and experience that state of awareness where we see the transcendental value of the unbounded mind, then we won't see them as alien or other. And this is true whether you're talking about someone from Zimbabwe or Saudi Arabia or Alpha Centauri. It really doesn't matter, because it's another sentient, conscious being who has folded within his reality the awakeness that is this universal aspect of our own selves. If you can experience this state of oneness, first of all, you can communicate, which is very important. Secondly, you will not feel that there is anything to be afraid of. Thirdly, you will see nothing to have a conflict over, because the things that are different really aren't essential and aren't important. I think you could put the founders of every religion on earth together and they'd have a grand old time with, probably, no differences amongst them. It's the divisions that men create, out of egotism, materialism, chauvinism, ignorance, hatred and stupidity, that cause the problems. The experience of oneness is the indispensable experience so needed at this time. So, the meta theme that I have taken away from my own experience of these states of awareness is that of oneness. It is the meta theme of the next 500,000 years, growing levels of oneness. And out of that grows perfect harmony, peace and enlightenment. You see this all around us. The world is becoming more integrated and more related. One of the great challenges of the extraterrestrial question is, what level of oneness must be attained for humanity to be universal, to be able to relate peacefully to conscious but non-human life? We live in a cosmic moment, where humans are starting to go into space, and we're beginning to wake up to the fact that we're being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, and simply realizing the oneness of humanity isn't enough. We're going to have to transcend even that and go to a level where we understand the universal aspect of the mind, the fact that conscious mind, awakeness itself, is a universal singularity and that the awakeness within the being of a life form from another planet is identical to the awakeness within us, even if our intellects are different and our bodies are different and our fund of knowledge is different. All those things really are not essential. This, then, speaks to the need for a universal spirituality. We live in a time not just of the need for the establishment of world peace but of universal peace, a time where such a peace can only be actualized fully through the acknowledgement of the universal nature of spirit and the universal nature of conscious mind. Otherwise, we will say, well, humanity is all one, and humans can have peace, but then there are all these others out there, and what shall we do with them? The truth is that these life forms are conscious and awake through the same inner awakeness that shines within each of us. There is absolutely no difference. Knowledge of this eliminates all fear. If you can be in that state of awareness, you are in the state that is eternal and immortal, because it is outside the limits of time. And it's infinite, because it's not restricted by space. So, that state of consciousness is the safest path to being able to establish world peace and universal peace. This is why the fundamental challenge in the world today is spiritual. Know ourselves as universal, awake beings, and on that foundation universal peace can be established. It may first be just studied intellectually, but ultimately it must be experiential. We live in a time where universal education and the universal ability to read should open up the whole array of knowledge to every denizen on the planet. And those who would care to be gatekeepers or bottlenecks, and keep a choke, hold on the flow of knowledge, simply need to step down and stand aside. Let's be honest. There was a time when 1 out of 1,000 people on Earth knew how to read. And the clerics were scribes. And they would read and repeat to the masses what were in spiritual teachings. but this is not needed in a time of universal education, where the majority of people can read. So, go read, and then gather together in your own spiritual community and share. But you don't need to anoint someone to be a guru or priest. To do so is actually deleterious to your spiritual development. It does not matter if it's some new age guru or people running around in robes saying that they're your entry point to the forgiveness of God. To me, it's all a harmful holdover from a time now gone. I'm not saying that everyone who shares and teaches such things are frauds. I'm saying that people who set themselves up as final arbiters, special priests if you will, of spiritual knowledge are misguided. That time is over. We are at least 100 to 150 years into a time when no one on earth has needed a priest, a rabbi, a mullah, or a guru, except as a facilitator, taught at each. Ultimately people will wake up to the truth, but the fact is that the spiritual infantilization of the masses is something which is a very entrenched institution. What I mean by spiritual infantilization is the situation where the power and access to enlightenment or spiritual knowledge goes through these filters, or control points, and everyone else is acting like children, rather passively receiving it. That is a type of learned behavior, and you have to unlearn that behavior. This is spiritual co-dependency. Granted, there's a role for people who want to share and teach spiritual information and pass it from one generation to another. But, I'm talking about hierarchy and the power grab and the control drama and the mindset of spiritual dependency. Unfortunately, this spiritual co-dependency is very, very powerful in terms of getting into people's minds where they feel like they can't learn and experience truth on their own without having someone there directing every step. One of the positive things about the early years of my life was learning that an individual can learn these truths and experience enlightenment with little formal education and no specific person directing it. The close-minded orthodoxy of religion is equaled or exceeded by the close-minded orthodoxy of scientists who, in our society, have become the new high priests. Remember, scientists are humans first and scientists later. So, they have all the failings and all the foibles of humans. Just because a Harvard professor has a PhD, it doesn't mean s. He doesn't have the same pitfalls that a priest would have in terms of self-aggrandizement and egotism. They, too, can become fanatical and dogmatic in the belief system in which they've been indoctrinated, in lieu of searching for the truth. Most of the problems that we face in our world today, whether they be spiritual and religious or scientific, political and economic, are all because people are holding on to some perspective that has nothing to do with the truth but has to do with their own belief system and addiction to something that's outdated, and they can't let go of it. This is certainly true of scientists. There are countless examples of how the mainstream scientific community has rejected enormous breakthroughs because it didn't fit into their belief system. This is why I say to people, one should have very few beliefs, but an abundance of faith. You can have infinite faith, but the specific beliefs you hold need to be minimal. Otherwise, people get trapped in brainwashed dogma, whether it be scientific or religious. They then become chauvinistic and egotistically attached to it. And as soon as that happens, one has stopped searching for the truth. We need a genuinely humble, universal spirituality. We must want to find the truth. And if the next door that opens cancels some of our previously held convictions and beliefs, then so be it. This is one of the reasons why, whether you're a physician or a scientist or someone doing spiritual work or an economist, the mind set of being attached to an idea, as opposed to being clearly focused on wanting to know the truth, is a hindrance to finding truth. On a personal note, I'm very grateful that, prior to going into medicine, I had studied meditation, health and diet so that I came into medicine with a broader paradigm. I could take what was good in the medical and scientific area, without getting brainwashed by it. This meta system trapping happens in every profession and in every field. It happens because people confuse the current state of knowledge with the ultimate state of knowledge. And the ultimate state of knowledge, no one has but the divine being. But because they know what they know, they think they know everything. And the truth is, most of what there is to know isn't known by anyone, ever. And so I think the only way to avoid the pitfalls of the high priests of scientific circles or of religious circles is to have enough genuine devotion to finding the truth and a willingness to reform what you're assessment is. Thus, there are very few things that become fixed and absolute. And everything else is relative. But that's the nature of the world we're in. It's a relative world. And there are very few things that need to be fixed and absolute. If you study the central teachings of every spiritual tradition on earth, they all agree, the existence of God, the qualities of forgiveness and love, and these larger spiritual themes. They're all universal. Where they differ is in one social teaching or another, or one cultural bias or another, which are really ephemeral and changing with each spiritual tradition and aren't that important, anyway. You know, you may be very orthodox in some areas, and that's fine if it works for you. But don't think that is the end and the beginning of all knowledge for spiritual traditions. It isn't. There are very few things that need to be in there. Or scientific, is designed to create rigidity and, in that way, engenders fanaticism. It then becomes a fiefdom that those benefiting from the structure of belief want to protect at all costs. And certainly this is true in science, where there are people who, no matter how much evidence you put in front of them, would say, this can't be true. Our science advisor for the project, Dr. Loder, has a colleague at the University of New Hampshire who said he wouldn't care if you gave him one of these new energy machines and he tested it and proved it worked. He still wouldn't believe it because it's not possible. So, these become fanatical belief systems that are just as tragic as the fanatical belief systems that certain religious extremists are attached to. And all of it ends up hurting society. One of the things I want to share is what happened at MU where I was learning to become a meditation instructor. There, I was experimenting with the applications of higher states of consciousness. One night, late, I was sitting, meditating, and I saw a young woman in my class in my mind's eye, and invited her to come over to my room. We were going to talk about spiritual matters and then meditate together. All of a sudden I saw her, in my mind's eye. I was in a deep quiet meditation, and I saw her leave her dorm, come out, walk around the campus, come up the steps, and then, bang, bang, knocked on my door. And it so startled me, because it was almost like a dream, except I was actually seeing it in living color. I opened the door and I said, oh, it is you. She said, oh, were you expecting me? Said, well, I saw you coming. And it was just crystal clear. During those years between ages 16 and 20, I started experiencing these sorts of things on a daily basis, if not many times a day, and at times continuously. And I have used this ability to create XETI and the Disclosure Project and to identify a lot of the intelligence sources and the witnesses we have. Some of them find me, but I find them, also, or draw them in. We'll talk about this later. It gets into high strangeness. Remember, the universe is folded within us, and we have enormous powers, every human being, not just me, and not just you, everyone, they're the same, and that when needed, we can call upon this higher power to do what is needed to achieve something wonderful. Now, if you're willing to make the ultimate sacrifice and you also have this knowledge, then you cross over into what's called a spirit war, roar, someone who's willing to do what's needed, no matter what the risks are. You exist beyond fear. I believe that these early years prepared me to do what I then later had to do and was part of my purpose in being here. I always felt that when I had the near-death experience and was told, you may come with us or return back to your body on Earth and was told that Spirit wanted me back on Earth, that I had this work to do. I could have chosen to have not come back here and gone on and stayed in that state of awareness with those very high celestial beings. I chose to submit to their will, not that I was happy with it. I told you initially it was rather depressing, having had the childhood I had, and being very sick, I wasn't really interested in coming back here. But I acceded to it. Transformation doesn't come into being except through the agency of the free will of humans. And that means us. Now, obviously, between 1980 and 1990 I was aware of these things, but having recently been married and having 4 children in 8 years, between 1980 and 1988, and becoming a medical doctor and residency and starting my medical practice, I had a full plate. Yet, I didn't forget these lessons. I knew that it was the time to establish the family and career and the ability to further do this work. Them, let's kill everyone we don't understand mind, set. Neither is going to get this right. We have to be cognizant of the time we live in. And the time we live in is not the time of the perfect world, yet. There was a 400,000-year cycle that literally started with Adam, who was the first avatar of that cycle. That cycle ended in the mid to late 1800s. What opened at that point is a 500,000-year cycle, the hallmark of which is universal peace, the oneness of human and universal life, and the eventual establishment of a genuine enlightened civilization on Earth. This will be a time of an unbroken period of peace that, at first, will be a political peace, a time of no more large wars and conflicts on Earth. But that will then give birth to a period of a great peace, the peace of enlightenment, where the entire Earth and everyone on it will grow in spiritual oneness. Earth will become one of the extraordinary centers of enlightenment, and known as such throughout the cosmos. So, as bad as things seem now, that's not where it's going to stay. And it isn't going to be like this much longer. This shift to a new time, a new era, has been going on for about 150 years. But out of 500,000 years, we are just at the early crack of dawn. And as one cycle closes and the other opens, a time of maximum chaos is created. This is why we are in the most chaotic period in known recorded history. But soon that will give way to another reality on Earth. The knowledge and spiritual capacity for world peace was available through the people who lived on Earth 100 years ago. The means of communication were there, and the divine will and divine plan were there. Humans elected not to act. It wasn't done, because we failed to do it. So, this is our choice. And now we are living through the ramifications of it. It's our choice right now, this moment. We're all making choices, collectively and individually. And the aggregate of the operation of that free will has given us the world we see today. The events that happened back in the mid to late 1800s are that a universal avatar, as I understand it, appeared and then disappeared during that time. That is, the soul avatar for the next 500,000 years appeared, created spiritually a new world, and then vanished. The information, knowledge and, within the finest realm of creation, the means for this new time, were all created. It's all here now, look and you will see it. We as humans have to see it, realize it and manifest it. We're the ones, now, who have to carry the rest of the water. The oceans are there, but the water has to still be delivered to where it's needed, and we're the ones who have to carry that water. It's a wonderful time, actually. And I'm quite certain that most people have no idea of the time in which we live. What they're waiting to happen has happened already. In the Bible it refers to a thief in the night, that this new world would be created spiritually, and this knowledge would appear, and it would be like a thief. Nobody would know until he was gone. Well, that's very true. So, I'm saying a lot of those events are 100 to 150 years in our rear view mirror. And most religious, political and other leaders are looking backwards. They're waiting for something to happen that happened already. So, the Earth and everyone on it, in a sense, is in a state of retardation, because it's been hijacked, mostly out of ignorance. And so the only way to fix ignorance is to share knowledge. As I said earlier, one of the problems is that nice people have a serious flaw, they're nice. And because nice people are nice, the rabid wolves and the mad dogs can rip them apart. So, we live in a time where a certain amount of clear, I'd spirituality and genuine knowledge has to be joined with some real courage. We live, unfortunately, in a time where spirituality has been equated with passivity. This is a very dangerous thing, because it's a propaganda or indoctrination that's designed to create people who are spiritually oriented and very nice, but very passive and ineffectual. And in that passivity, the rabid dogs can have fool's way. People like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, Jr., these were people who were flawed human beings just like we all are, but they were spiritually oriented, and had the courage of their convictions, and they acted. They were threatened and took risks and ultimately were killed. I am asked in almost every lecture I give, "Aren't you afraid?" I answer, "Well, look. You have to understand that as an emergency doctor, I've taken care of I don't know how many people killed over a 50-cent beer. Two high school boys came in code blue, dead on arrival, that we tried to save. This happened because one of them had patted the other one's girlfriend on the fanny and they pulled out knives and sliced each other's guts and hearts open. I've seen people die over such ephemera and over such trivial things that if you understand what these issues are about and you're not willing to step up to the plate and take a bullet, you're a coward. I've said flat out to some of these folks who are involved in these projects, you want to whack me? Go ahead. I'm on borrowed time anyway. I figure that everything past the age of 17, when I was clinically dead, is a gift. The world needs people who understand what the task is and are willing to go the distance. The time we're living in right now is a real test for people to get that balance. It's a yin and yang, male, female attribute sort of thing. We must combine the spiritual and loving with the active, assertive and disciplined. Change requires that we bring those qualities together. It's like two wings of a bird. And it's often said that in humanity, the male and female, are two wings of a bird. And so long as one is impaired, the bird will never fly straight and will never stay aloft. This is not only in terms of men and women, and basic equality, but it is also about the attributes that we have to evince and demonstrate in our life to manifest that kind of harmony. We live in a world where women generally are taught not to be assertive and active, and men are not taught to be spiritual and loving. This is a perversion of human nature. It has nothing to do with male or female. There may be dominance in these areas in one sex or the other, but the task is to bring them into harmony. The duality of this or that we have to transcend. We have to bring both of these qualities and attributes to bear in our lives. Unless we do, we're not going to be successful in establishing the kind of civilization on this planet that will be enduring. Had we done so for 100 years, I have no doubt in my mind that we would have already had a permanently established peaceful world civilization here. I'm certain by the mid-1900s we would have had electro-gravitic transportation between cities, we would have had free energy and non-polluting energy forms running the earth, we would have had all these things. People laugh and say, "Oh, it's like the Jetsons." Well, in fact, some of these cartoons and science fiction stories that were created were based on very well-known facts and prototypes of technologies that were up and flying around back in the 50s and 60s. We have not collectively or individually exercised our powers through the operation of free will and the knowledge that goes with it that can create this new world. As soon as we do, we'll have it. And until we do, it won't happen. This is why I encourage people to not look at this as some visionary, futuristic effort, but in reality, as doing a bit of a catch-up. We can talk about the real future, because the establishment of a peaceful civilization using non-harmful technologies to run our civilization is something that really could have been achieved decades ago. It's a total transformation of the way humans will live on Earth and explore the cosmos. I looked at this man and enigmatically sensed that he had a brain tumor. Now, there were no symptoms of a brain tumor. He did not have any neurological findings such as paralysis, numbness, seizure, etc., but I had the power of my convictions. So I turned to the nurse and I said, "I want a stat CT of the head." Well, she looked at me like I was crazy and said, Dr. Greer, he's only got the flu. And I said, just do it. Thank God I didn't have to go through an HMO or some insensitive bean counter, because if I had, this man would be dead today.